Teachers and spiritual guides come to us in dreams, often in unexpected, even shocking guises. When I was asking for dream guidance once on the book that was published as Conscious Dreaming, a very lively, vulgar, burly little fellow called Marty jumped into my dreamscape. A real low-grade Hollywood or Las Vegas hustler type in a loud check suit, chomping on a foul-smelling stogie. The light glancing off his bald pate. Jumping up and down with excitement, Marty said to me, "Tell him it's about entertainment, kid." And he proceeded to show me he could dance all over a three-ring circus that he had brought with him, which magically appeared in my dreamscape. He vaulted across the three-ring circus, grabbed an attractive woman in the first row of the seats opposite, and started smooching with her, yelling back at me around the edge of his cigar, "It's about entertainment, kid. Remember, it's about entertainment." Now, this might sound like a not particularly evolved spiritual guide, but as a matter of fact, Marty turning up in my dream in that way gave me exactly the advice I needed for the project for which I had incubated the dream. I mean, I asked for guidance and I got it. It came in an unexpected guise. We must be open to that in life, that the teachings we need may turn up in strange, even weird ways. You know, shock and humor are great teaching tools. All great spiritual masters that I can think of have used them. And Marty was, on that instance, my teacher. Perhaps a low-grade angel, if you want to think of him as an angel, or a low-flying angel, anyway. But he reminded me that to bring the tools of conscious dreaming, to bring the old way of dreaming back in our society, we must make it fun. We mustn't add it to the chores and routines and schedules of already hectic and overcrowded lives. It must be fun. So he gave me guidance I needed. And that led me to reflect, as I reflect now, on the many different ways in which spiritual guides and teachers turn up quite spontaneously in our dreams. Once conducting a dream workshop for an Episcopalian congregation in New York, I was approached by a very earnest, sincere-looking elderly woman during the break, dressed in grey. She looked like a good woman who'd given much of her life to service. She looked like a very decent person, and she looked careworn. And she said to me with some anxiety in her face, she said, "Can I meet my guardian angel in my dreams?" "Well, I don't beat around the bush," I said, "absolutely." She looked pained. I said, "What's the problem?" She said, "Well, it's like this. I've asked on several occasions for a dream in which I could meet my guardian angel." "Yes, yes, what happened?" I probed. "Each time," she said, "I got Garfield the cat." And I thought about it. You know, Garfield the cat might seem like an unlikely spiritual guide. But I turned back to her and I said, "Well," playing the game of pretending I just arrived from outer space, which isn't difficult for me to do upon occasion, I said to her, "Well, who is Garfield the cat?" And she said, "Well, he's greedy, he's selfish, he's always looking out for number one." And I looked at her again and I said, "Well, Angelos, angel in Greek means messenger. That's what it means. Angel means messenger. Is there a sense in which Garfield could be a dream messenger?" The light came on. She said, "You mean it's okay for me to have a piece of that chocolate pie from the buffet?" I said, "I think Garfield would say, absolutely." So, let's be open to the unexpected. Let's be prepared for the possibility that whatever path we take in our spiritual progress, or lack of it, dream guides, spiritual teachers appearing in dreams, may put on the guises and forms that will communicate to us most effectively. We perceive our spiritual guides in the forms that we are ready to perceive. I think that is simple truth in spiritual experience and in conscious dreaming. Our guides appear to us in the forms we are ready to perceive. There is a statement very similar to that in the Gnostic Gospels. So it's not surprising that in spontaneous sleep dreams, people encounter guides who show themselves in shocking and unlikely forms, shocking the dreamer awake, or encounter guides who remind them of simple and familiar truths that they lost somewhere along the way. Sometimes because of forgetfulness or disappointment, or because we are disenchanted with what goes on in so many organized religions, We forget the truth of the religion or spiritual practice of our upbringing. I think of a man who had a dream in which a simple Christian appeared to him, a man he thought might be a bit simple-minded in his dream. He was very smiley, seemed a bit simple. A man appeared at the dreamer's door in the dream and said to him, "I come from my father's house." And the dreamer, paying more attention, looked at the simple Christian, wondering why he had appeared at his door. And the simple Christian said to him, smiling, friendly, "What is your pact with God?" That dream changed the dreamer's life. He'd been raised in a Christian family, a non-observant family. He'd been very disappointed in the lack of direct spiritual experience within his church. Unfortunately, many of our traditional religious organizations for a long time closed the door to direct encounters with the sacred, leaving us all hungry for spiritual meaning and spiritual experience so we could live in our flesh and sinew. But that dream recalled him to the personal understanding that for him, with his upbringing, with his tradition, the Christ is a real teacher and a real embodiment of the power of love in the cosmos. He took that dream of the simple Christian, the man he's initially inclined to look down upon or reject, to lead him to question, well, what is my pact with God? What a pregnant question that is. If you're asked, what is your pact with God? What is your arrangement with the divine? It implies that you have one, doesn't it? But have you forgotten it? Is there an undertaking here that you might have mislaid, dropped along the way? This is an example, and we'll come across others, of how active dreaming is an act of soul remembering, of remembering knowledge that belongs to you on the planes of soul and spirit, that you may have dropped somewhere along the way, knowledge of that pact with the divine, a knowledge of that form of the divine that most clearly can speak to you, within which most clearly you can find yourself. Now, dream messengers, as we have seen, appear in many forms, some more reliable than others. In our dreams, we routinely encounter all kinds of spiritual entities on all sorts of levels of evolution or devolution. We encounter departed people. Not only people connected with us by bonds of love or relationship or biology or spiritual family, but other departed people who might be in the field, who might be there in the territory of our dreaming, because the dream world is also the home of spirits living in the astral body, which is the condition of many people after they die, and I believe immediately before they are born. So we have many encounters with creatures other than living people within the dreamscape. It becomes rather important to discriminate what is coming through, what these encounters mean. There are a lot of people who run around talking to you about their spiritual guides. Well, the shamanic approach to these things is actually quite active. It's rather different from the passive trans-channelers approach to these things, which I'm not criticizing or derogating. It's just different. The shamanic approach is one of active encounter. There is an underlying belief in the reality of spirits and the reality of spiritual guides. But spiritual guides are to be questioned and challenged and encouraged to prove their bona fides, just as people you encounter in waking life, in ordinary reality. You should check them out on either plane. Here are some practical guidelines I find helpful in my own practice in learning to discriminate what is coming through when I encounter an entity who may be a spiritual guide or a being living on the spiritual planes of existence. First of all, I want clear identification of who or what I am dealing with. If I encounter a being in dreaming or journeying who might be a spiritual guide or teacher for me, I want to know his or her name. I want to know its name. I want some method of identification. Sometimes such teachers do not give names because they turn out to be an aspect of your own higher self, a theme we will discuss in greater depth. But if it's an entity of a transpersonal nature, not directly related to me. I want to identify it. I want its name. I want a symbol. I want some code to guide and validate the exchange. Secondly, I avoid contact, like the plague, with any entity on the spiritual planes that tries to deal with people in the language of either domination or submission. I will give you all the things of this earth if you serve me, or I will be your slave and serve you. It's astonishing, at this stage of our evolution, how many people enter into compacts on the inner planes with entities that talk to them that way. Avoid it. Avoid any entity that you encounter in dreaming or in altered states of consciousness that wishes to communicate or deal with you in the language of either domination or subservience. This is an unhealthy contact. Thirdly, when you are engaging in contact and communication with the spirits, as shamanic practitioners and those on the shaman's path routinely do, as do psychics, clairvoyants, and channelers, please watch your vibratory level, watch your energy level. If you notice yourself subject to severe energy swings or dips or losing energy after these encounters, they need to be cut off. Something is wrong. You're involved in an unhealthy energy exchange which is flowing unevenly. It's flowing from you to something else. On the psychic planes, vampirism is a real phenomenon. Energy theft is a real phenomenon. We're familiar with it in our everyday lives. We know those people who drain our batteries in everyday life. You should avoid those connections too, and we'll come back to that issue. But on these planes of dealing with spiritual guides, please avoid any relationship that seems to carry with it a loss of energy on your own part. So check your energy level after the contact and continue checking it. And finally, for now, trust your feelings about these things. We sometimes overrule our strong and natural instinct in these areas, and it's foolish. Your feelings will guide you. Is the relationship, the communication, positive in your life? Does it make you a more loving, generous, compassionate being? Or is it promoting negative aspects of your personality? Worst of all, that part of you that wants to be master of the universe, and that control freak and ego rampaging through the cosmos. Others can probably help to guide you in these areas. So those are some cautionary notes, not meant to deter you from the quest through active dreaming to contact, communicate with, and develop your relationship with spiritual teachers and allies, but to offer you some necessary cautions along the way that will help to ensure, I believe, that your encounters are positive and life-fulfilling. Among the many spiritual guides and teachers who might appear to us in dreaming, the most likely to appear in your dreams are departed loved ones or friends who have a natural interest in your well-being, in checking in on you, on bringing you timely information. I think again of those dreams in the year after his death, when my father brought practical, life-sustaining information to me and to other members of his family. You may have been blessed with similar encounters. They are unlikely to be long-standing encounters in the sense of going on year after year after year. If you're dealing with a departed member of your own family or a friend who passed over within the last few years, you should probably expect that person to move on to another level of spiritual evolution and not to be around on a regular basis. I think of a friend of mine whose departed grandmother, who was a wise woman in rural Alabama, in the Appalachians, came to her in dreams many, many years after her death, when my friend took up the path of a healer. She had herself been challenged by a life-threatening illness from which she recovered with the aid of dreams. Towards the end of this process, she had a big dream in which she found herself out in the woods, and an older woman, radiant in her appearance, who she recognized after a few moments as her departed grandmother, started showing her in great detail a plant that grew in the woods, making sure that she noticed the furriness of the stem, the shape of the leaves, the way the leaves grew directly opposite each other along the stem, and other details so that the dreamer would not fail to be able to recognize this plant if she encountered it in nature. In the dream, the woman's departed grandmother also showed her how to boil up this plant and administer it for healing purposes to a patient who appeared in the dream. On waking, she was able to draw the plant that her departed grandmother had showed her in the dream. She was subsequently able to identify it as Hart's Tongue Fern, which is well known in Europe, relatively uncommon in the United States, but it can be found, and recognized as a medicinal plant with various uses. She was later able to find a practical use for this plant. What's going on here? We see a person's departed grandmother, wise in some areas of healing with herbs and plants, appearing to a dreamer at a moment in her life when she herself is being drawn to a healing path. In the dreamer's life, part of her calling was a life-threatening illness. In discovering the means to heal herself, she opened to the possibility of contributing to the healing of others, at which point a spiritual guide appeared to her in the form of her departed grandmother. Is this teacher the literal individual spirit of her departed grandmother coming back many years after her death? In this particular case, I suspect that it is. In other cases, I'm open to the possibility that the teacher who appears puts on the mask of the departed relative in order to be a familiar face, a reassuring presence, and works through that. In this case, whichever explanation applies, it was a wholly benign relationship, one that one could test by one's feelings, by watching the vibratory and energy effects, by watching the positive outcome for others. The spiritual guides who come through to us in our dreams, who summon us from our everyday lives into a deeper life, may also come, of course, in the guides of deities, of gods and goddesses, of saints and archangels. And this encounter, even if it is with someone who appears under a familiar name or familiar image, can be shocking. It can shock us awake to that deeper life. I remember well how shocked I was when a spiritual teacher appeared to me in a conscious dream. A teacher of otherworldly beauty and radiance in a body of light with the impression of wings, a form neither male nor female but of transcendent beauty. And after calling me to a particular path and deepening my understanding of what the path might involve, described itself as Gabrielle. I was so disappointed in the familiar images of the church and of organized religion at the time that I was most reluctant to equate my Gabrielle with the Archangel Gabriel, whose name is vibrated and pronounced in Hebrew, Gabrielle. I tended to see my angelic messenger as female rather than male, which also helped me to avoid making the correlation. Later it became unavoidable to me, but in my life, in my dreaming, I had had an encounter with one of the many forms, perhaps one of the many aspects, of the Archangel of Dreams, who walks through the scriptures of all the three peoples of the book, of Jews, Christians, and Muslims. Indeed, in the Muslim stories, it is Gabriel who wakes the prophet from his sleep in the cave and escorts him on his journey to the upper world, riding the mystical steed across the heavens. I'm not the only dreamer who has had a dream encounter with an archangelic figure. Perhaps such a figure is stalking you in your dreams, calling you to a deeper life, calling you also sometimes to remembering some part of your own religious tradition or upbringing or that of your ancestors that you forgot about or lost along the way, which it's timely for you to remember. Spiritual guides appear in dreams in other forms. I wonder how many dreamers since the death of Carl Gustav Jung have dreamed of the great Swiss psychologist. Or alternatively, how many have dreamed of some version of Jung's personal vision guide, Philemon. I've had dreams of Jung, on and off, for much of my adult life. I don't happen to believe that these are encounters with the individual spirit of Carl Gustav Jung. I believe that these are encounters with the personality essence that reflects the collected body of his teachings and his general style of thinking and exploring, which was actually highly shamanic. As a child, I had encounters with a Philemon who did not resemble Jung's Philemon except in name. Jung's vision guide was an entity he perceived as an old man with the shimmering blue wings of a kingfisher and the horns of a bull, who seemed to come from the eastern edge of the Mediterranean, from a world of Gnostic paganism in the early centuries of the Christian era. Jung's dedication to his dream guide, Philemon, was so earnest and so well served that one of the last works of his hands was a construction of a monument in honor of his dream guide, Philemon, at his retreat on the lake in Switzerland. My relationship with my Philemon has also been one that has empowered and given heart to the whole of my life. But when I think of my dreams of Jung and of other dreams reported of Jung, I think that we might be looking here at the equivalent of the teaching that goes on generation to generation amongst shamanic and spiritual lineages, where teachers of the past come back in dreams or in meditative states to students or teachers or shamans to be with guidance. Jung was a shaman of the West. He knew in the manner of a shaman the spiritual crisis that he suffered and finally won through over a bitter period of 7 years of encounters with the unconscious. It was a typical shamanic crisis of initiation in which his world was full of strange synchronicities, of visitations from the departed, of spiritual manifestations erupting into the physical world from beyond the physical world, one that shook him alive to a deeper life in the manner of the shamans. So it's not surprising that Westerners, on a path that parallels that of traditional shamans, should have encounters with a dream version of Jung, as well as with native teachers, or with figures from their own ancestral past. Ancestral figures may appear as important spiritual guides in our dreams today. My life has been greatly shaped by dreams I have had since I've been on a shamanic path of Celtic ancestors of mine, particularly a druid in Scotland 1,000 years ago, who refused to become the willing sacrifice at a time of great danger for his people. His life fascinates me. I have the funny sensation that if we are intimately related, in some way my life might influence his, just as his life may have influenced mine, and that the burdens and challenges of his life in some way mirror the burdens and challenges I've had to face in this one. I have learned from him, but not in the passive way of sitting at the feet of the guru, through an active dialogue, an active comparison of life experiences. As we've said earlier, another type of spiritual guide who may come through to you in dreams may be connected with the land where you live. It's not unusual for people on a spiritual path who live in North America, for example, to have encounters with Native Americans in dreams. These encounters are sometimes mixed. There are many Native Americans who died in conditions of horror or genocide, imported war, famine, disease, alcoholism, and some were left lost and confused and never properly buried, and their bones sent to museums instead of laid in the places of their ancestors. So these encounters are not always an unmixed blessing, but they are always an opportunity for learning and growth. And sometimes the native spirits who appear to us in dreams are those of great earth keepers, guardians of the land, the species that share life upon the land, guardians of the real people themselves, who will speak to modern dreamers from outside that tradition. If they dream true, if they dream strong, if they are dedicated to the defense of the earth and of all the species that share life upon it, they may speak clearly to dreamers who dream true. In talking about guides who appear in dreams, we mustn't forget the generic characters who appear in our dreams who might be angels in disguise. I think now of the role of taxi drivers in my dreams, who sometimes get me out of tight spots and sometimes show me really wonderful things. One point in my life when I was just starting to write some historical fiction and wondering whether this was an adequate vehicle for some of the things I wanted to say, which went far beyond the genre, I noticed in dream after dream that a taxi would pull up, and it was a wonderful vintage automobile like Genevieve from the old movie, and there would be this taxi driver in livery, really in uniform. And he showed me that I could stow all my bags in the trunk. There's plenty of room in this magnificent old automobile, old roadster, for anything I wanted to put in it. And I finally got the message. Actually, the historical novel would make a capacious and suitable vehicle for what I was doing at that time. And I said to him at one point, going back into my dream by the technique of dream reentry in order to talk to a dream character and elicit his full teaching, I said to him, "Why do you turn up in this 1920s automobile? The historical fiction I was writing was set in the 1700s. Why don't you turn up in a horse and carriage?" He said, "If I turned up in a horse and carriage, you wouldn't have believed me. It would have been too out of kilter with the style of your dreaming and the style of your modern life. But by turning up in a period vehicle of a more plausible kind, I got your attention and I got you to sit in the car with me." He added, "I also wanted to remind you that history is not just about the 1700s or even about the past. History is also about the future. And you can change your period any time you like." So a taxi driver, in this sequence of dreams, turned out to be a messenger, a dream angel, a dream messenger. In disguise, perhaps you have dreams with an elevator operator that plays an interesting role, or perhaps you face a customs official or immigration official in your dreams, as I do, who is playing a more than ordinary role, or perhaps it's a hotel manager, perhaps it's the plumber. These generic characters in dreams who, it turns out, do not correspond exactly to their counterparts in physical life, are often dream messengers in disguise. Well, let's suppose that you would like to have a closer relationship with a spiritual guide or teacher. How should you approach this? Once again, I suggest to you, let your dreams be your guide. Catch your night dreams, the dreams that come to you unasked for, instead of putting yourself through some program of prefabricated images or suggestions. Catch your dreams. Your dream guides are reaching to you through your dreams. There's another Navajo story about that, which in its essence says the following. Back close to the beginning of things, when the hero twins were walking this earth, killing off the monsters, the demon of fatigue begged for his life, saying to the hero twins, "Don't kill me. Why shouldn't we kill you?" say the hero twins. "You're the demon of fatigue. Why should people get tired and worn out all the time?" And the demon of fatigue answers, according to one account, "Well, if people don't get tired, they won't go to sleep. And if they don't go to sleep, they won't dream. And if they don't dream, how can they remain in contact with the spirit world? If people stop dreaming, how will they remain in contact with the spirit world?" The teaching, the insight, is that our spiritual guides are reaching to us all the time through our dreams. If we will only stop and listen, we will find the means of contact, the means of resuming communication, by going back through the dream gate into the place of encounter in the dreamscape with the teacher. By learning the arts of conscious dreaming, we facilitate the possibility of communication with the spiritual teachers who reveal themselves in dreams. I have the suspicion that the most profound teacher that you will ever encounter on the spiritual planes is in no way alien to yourself, separate but not different, different but not separate. It is your own higher self, and we will have to return to the discussion of how you communicate, dialogue with your higher self. Let me mention one other kind of dream guide who might appear in your dreams. You know, in dreams you can not only see into the future, you can sometimes catch a glimpse of your future self, which opens the possibility of having a conscious encounter with your future self. I was made alert to this possibility some years ago in a shamanic dream gathering, when I asked a woman in the circle to journey for me, to make a conscious dream journey, on a question I had. My question was, how can I be a better teacher? She came back grinning from ear to ear and she said, well, I told him, I couldn't tell Robert this, but he said I had to tell you, so here's what it is. And I'm listening, wondering who he is. And she says, well, he said, tell Robert, first of all, he has to learn to be more humble. I said to her, what do you mean? I'm very proud of my humility. She said, he says you have to do more about this. All right, that's always timely. The ego is like one of those moles in sideshows that jumps up and you have to beat it down and it jumps up again. Yes, always timely. Remember to be humble. And she says, he says, tell Robert not to spend a minute worrying about his public image or persona. People will know him for what he is. I liked that. I liked that a lot. Actually, it was very important guidance for me. It was very serviceable in the years that followed to stop worrying about your persona and, you know, how you appear to other people and just do your thing. Do your thing. Do it. Trust. And she gives me some other information. She says, he says, remind Robert that this belongs to him, showing her an immense crystal ball full of electric light. I liked this even better, of course. But now I'm very eager to know, who is the he that the woman dream journeyer is talking about? She smiles even wider and she says, Robert, he looked just like you, maybe 20 years older. He was wearing a robe, but it wasn't a fancy robe, it was more like a bathrobe. And I journeyed that day. I journeyed through her dream gate, through her description of her experience, and had a good look at my future self. This is a possible self, of course. This is the Robert who hadn't, you know, turned out to be an egomaniac or a drunken derelict bum, who seemed to be doing a halfway decent job of teaching other people and pursuing his studies and facilitating some healing work. I liked the look of him. I liked him a lot better than I liked myself at that stage of my life. And since then, I've been alive to the possibility that any one of us, spontaneously in our dreams or as a conscious dream journey, might be able to sneak a look at our future selves and receive guidance from this being. It's an interesting idea, isn't it? To slip forward in time, have a look at yourself as you might be 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. This is perhaps a silent teaching. You might be able to have a conversation with your future self. I haven't actually done that. It's been sufficient for me to look at my future self, get a feel for his life, and see if I like it or not, and receive the teaching in that way. Have a look at your future self. If you're interested in playing this game, spend a moment getting quiet and relaxed. See yourself going forward on the road of your life. Choose a time frame. You're going to go forward 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, to beyond your physical life, maybe. And have a look at it all. Have a look at how you are, how you feel about things, how you feel about your work, your relationships, where you're living. And if you like what you're looking at, try to notice how you got there and use the image of that future self as encouragement to pursue your path. If you don't like the feelings you get when you find your future self as you come back along the path, you might want to look at a different choice, a different crossroads, a different turning, a different way of approaching things on the road that lies ahead of you so you don't end up in that situation. If you have any anxiety about your ability to get in touch with your spiritual teachers, then you may draw courage from a thrice-told tale about all of this that has the wild ferocity of the shaman tales that shock us awake and alive. And I'd like to share it with you. This story, ironically, was a favorite with the vegetarian teachers of Advaita Vedanta when they were first coming to the United States. I'm going to tell a slightly more personal version. You may recognize some features of the story, but more interesting to you will be how you find yourself inside this story, because this story is about you. Here is a scene in the forest. Through the forest comes a she-tiger. She is pregnant. The great she-tiger is carrying new life, and she is ravenously hungry. She has two lives to feed. Beyond the forest, in the clearing below, is the flock of goats. The she-tiger sniffs. She smelled lunch. She gets ready to spring. She is awkward with her great belly. Her leap is off. She strikes her head against a protruding boulder and crushes her skull. She falls to the clearing below, and she's dead. The goats, who have scattered in panic, come back one by one, and they notice a small, seemingly blind, newborn, furry thing on the ground, mewling, meow, meow. Oh, poor thing, say the goats. Look at it. It's so helpless. We should take it in and raise it, they say. Very charitable intention. So they take the newborn tiger cub and they start rearing it as a goat. And it doesn't fit in very well. But they try to train it. They teach it how to bleat instead of roar. They teach it to eat grass. And it does its best. I mean, it's always the odd one out. It's never accepted as a natural member of the flock, but it's doing its best. And life goes along. Until one day, the great man-eating male Bengal tiger comes stalking through the forest. He's always hungry. And when he sees and smells the goats on the plain below, he thinks, snack time. And he readies his spring, and his spring is precise. All the goats scatter, except the wannabe goat, who stays. The he-tiger looks down at the wannabe goat and says, "What are you doing here?" The wannabe goat bleats. "Meh! We don't bleat," says the man-eater. The wannabe goat, now terrified, starts munching grass. "And furthermore, we are not vegetarians." The man-eater is so disgusted with the wannabe goat that he grabs it by the scruff of the neck and he carries it to a reflecting pool where he shows it its true face in the water. When the wannabe goat sees its true face in the water, it is more terrified than before. Meh! Thoroughly disgusting. The tiger carries the cub back to his lair, forces open the jaws of the cub, and crams down its gullet some of the meat from the gazelle it was eating for breakfast. And as the blood and juices of the gazelle drip down the throat of the wannabe goat, do you know what it does? It opens its little jaws and it roars. Whereon the man-eater says to the cub, "Now you know who you are, we can start to discuss how you ought to behave." Well, does that story take away your appetite? Or change it, or add to it. Does it shock you? It's meant to shock you. It's meant to be raw and primal. It's meant to break through the carapace of expectations and cozy, cutesied up, sugared representations of things, and carry you to the place of the tiger, which is the place in this story of the larger self, and that is why the gentle vegetarian Vedantists liked to tell it, because it shocks us into awareness of the place and teaching of the tiger self, which is hunting the little self, as the tiger in the story hunts the wannabe goat, to recall the little self to its larger purpose, to recall us to recognition of our true face, to recall us to the way we ought to live, in the knowledge of our true identity. The reason that you will find your spiritual teacher is that while you think you are hunting for your spiritual teacher, your spiritual teacher, the tiger in the soul, is hunting you. We've discussed spiritual guides and allies that might come to you in various forms in dreams and might return to you in conscious dream journeys. For shamans, one of the great spiritual teachers is death, although in modern Western society we treat death as a terror and an adversary. Death walks at the shaman's left shoulder. Another definition of a shaman, not contradictory to the others, but complementary to the others, is that a shaman is someone who has died and come back, one of the twice-born, who can guide souls on the other side of physical death because he knows the territory, or she knows the territory, has become a frequent traveler in those realms. In the next session, we will begin to explore death, dying, and the afterlife as their possibilities, and challenges are revealed to us through dreaming, and how through conscious dreaming we can prepare ourselves for the great adventure that follows physical death.